Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
And lo, the gods looked down and they said, "Hey, buddy, how are your crops doing? You want to sacrifice a pig or something? What are you thinking? Maybe you can make the crops go that way. That would be pretty cool." And that's one of the many things we'll be talking about on this episode of American Godcast. I'm Alex.
Bow down before corn. Great corn. The syrup. The popped corn. I'm Justin.
Electrolytes is what crops crave.
Oh. No, you messed that up very badly.
I messed it up really bad.
Brondo is what crops crave, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but then it's the electrolytes.
Okay. Yeah. Great ref. And here's some more great refs for you. We're going to be talking about American Gods, Ashes and Demons, the third episode of season three of this brand new season. We're just getting into it. We're in the first half here, so still lots of setup going on, but lots of things do go down in the episode. A regular reminder, we're not going to be talking about every plot point, so watch the episode first, then come back here. We're going to talk about stuff right in the episode. But here's the broad strokes. The big thing about this episode is that we meet Demeter, a new goddess who is being courted by Mr. Wednesday. Seems they had a relationship back in the day. As usual, it went sour. He goes to visit her at a, what would you call it, convalescent home? Not exactly an insane asylum, but it's something like that.
I think it's an old folks home.
Know the difference between those two things before you end up in one.
Oh, shit. I put my parents in an insane asylum. Was that wrong?
That's wrong. That's the wrong.
We're just kindly old Zalbins. Why are we in straitjackets?
So anyway, he visits her there, manages to kind of woo her back, as Mr. Wednesday is wont to do. Meanwhile, Shadow Moon is over in the lakeside investigating what's gone on with Allison. We get a couple more clues in that mystery, but he gets a little bit distracted both by his landlord, who he seems to be striking up a little bit of a relationship with.
Yes.
And also he starts to see visions that draw him towards Bilquis. Bilquis, as we talked about in previous episodes, has some bad stuff going down once she unbirthed some sort of tech guy. We don't find too much more about this episode, but something terrible has gone down in her apartment. And by the end of the episode, she is missing. Technical Boy is in her apartment. It's covered in blood, completely wrecked. So something terrible has happened there. Again, yeah. That's very, very broad strokes. The other thing that you probably want to know about that I'm sure we'll want to start off with, or at least I'm sure people want to start off with, is finally see Laura Moon again as she goes down to the underworld or
purgatory.
The afterlife, or I'm sure we can talk about exactly what's going on there. And she has a little bit of a "this is your life" moment as she finds out her memories of everything that went wrong in her life, specifically with her dad, are not actually her fault.
I'm really pissed. I thought the Dick Lady's fucking storyline was done. I'm very upset that we're continuing with her.
You mean Laura Moon?
I forgot. You don't like Laura Moon.
Yes.
Oh,
Alex, I can't believe you threw that to
Pete
first.
Call her that. Dick Lady is awful.
Oh, God.
I don't want her to do that.
Don't call her
like Pete. I don't want to call you out right on the podcast, but I don't think you've ever called her that on the podcast before.
I have not.
That is skimming the surface of slut shaming, if not like diving right deep in. So
whoa! I'm not trying to slut shame anybody. No way.
You're defining her by the one moment where she sucked a dick.
No,
I'm defining her at the point where she bit a dick off and then it flew through the air. Oh. They did a bunch of. We saw it way too many times, so that's why I call her Dick Lady. No slut shaming. You do your life, live your life how you want. I'm not going to judge it. I'm upset at her. I call her a Dick Lady because she's also not really doesn't hold people in high regard. When she couples with somebody, she usually doesn't treat them well. And I don't like that about her. You know, have sex with whoever, how many times as you want, you know.
Yeah.
But I just feel that,
unbirth
someone she is
if you
not
want.
A good person, yeah. And I was very happy that she turned okay. to dust, and I thought she was done. I was very excited about
so,
that.
So, thank you, Pete. Thank you for clarifying. I apologize. It does not seem like you're skimming the surface of the slut shame lake. Instead, you're kind of dipping your toe in and being like, ooh, this is a little cold for me.
Yeah.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Metaphors, Matt.
She's not a good person.
I like the Laura Moon storyline here. I was sad that she just straight dusted at the beginning of the season. So
that was
to have her back in the game is good. I love she jumps into a classic Charlie and the Chocolate Factory elevator mm-hmm. to fly off to.
It reminded me of Crowded Subway. I was
did
like,
you guys
oh,
read
man.
That second book, Charlie and the Great Glass Elevator with the Vermicious Canids? Messed me up as yeah. a kid.
I definitely read that, and Charlie goes to hell and realizes that he wasn't to blame for Grandpa Joe having cheating on his grandma.
Yeah, I mean, there were four of them in the bed. Something had to be going on, you know what I'm talking about?
Hey, that was anything goes in that multi-pairing quadruple.
Like Laura Moon always says, four in the bed, get in head.
What the?
You started this, Pete.
No way, man.
Yeah, it's weird for you to blame Pete for saying that.
So yeah, I'm curious. Let's talk about just the general thrust of this afterlife, because I almost felt of two minds of it. I'm with you, Justin, that I like seeing Laura Moon again. I like seeing just generally divorced from absolutely anything, the plot line and what she went through. And I think the actress did a really good job with it. It was fun seeing the dad from Orphan Black as the AV guy. Always good to see him. I don't know who played the usher. Probably wasn't Usher, but could be somebody like that.
Oh, boy. Usher gets a cut. Usher gets a cut whenever anyone plays an Usher.
It's true.
Yeah.
The thing that I was kind of two minds here, that I understand why they went for this choice, but having sort of like generic corporate travel zone, travel hub afterlife felt weird to me in the world of American Gods, where you have all this specificity. And the reason I think I understand why they made that choice is they kind of found this middle ground of this doesn't connect to Norse mythology or African mythology or Native American mythology or anything like that. But at the same time, I don't know. I would have wanted something a little different here, personally.
Well, I think...
Oh, go ahead.
I think what they were going for, I agree with you. It did feel a little out of place for the show because it wasn't specific at all. But I also think this was specifically purgatory, so it wasn't sort of a full-on afterlife take. And they haven't done this particular thing, and it feels like sort of a new god version of – like the old gods are still mm-hmm. living in their world, but the logistics of god religion – afterlife has to keep functioning, so that would update into new god stuff. The whole thing reminded me of hell from Preacher. Mm-hmm. So it was a little derivative in that way, which is what
I like the idea of like purgatory. You have to get on a shitty kind of subway car or like elevator and ride that you know to purgatory. I kind of really enjoyed that choice. But I just think that, like, I like how in the beginning she did say, like, oh, this is like defending your life or one of those things that we've seen before. So I'm glad they kind of called that out before we went on this, you know, like, here's what you did and why you are here type of thing.
I liked a lot of the visuals in this sequence. I thought the pile of blackness or the oozing blackness or whatever it was that chased her down the hallway was very cool. Like we talked about, the elevator was very neat as well, going through this, you know, very multicolored cosmos that we've seen a couple of times before in the show. And I also liked her stepping into the film. I thought that was a neat conceit. Cool. I think that worked really well.
What did you think of the, like, the Beetlejuice waiting room scenario with the different color coordination?
Wait, what do you mean?
Well, the different
Beetlejuice, like, he had a number of tickets, and he stole a ticket, where in this, she had a different color, and she stole the color orange, so she could go next.
Yeah. Clear Beetlejuice call out.
Yeah, it's a clear Beetlejuice thing.
That's right. She did say, I've seen the Black Plague 5 billion times, and it gets funnier every time I've seen it. I do remember that line. Yeah. So, again, good. Very clear Beetlejuice call out.
Yeah.
Alex, nice. Not getting the Beetlejuice ref and then coming hard with his own Beetlejuice ref. Did not see that coming. That's going to play really well when you go to the afterlife.
I think so. I'll just twist my tiny head around.
And maybe it'll be this moment where you'll step into your film and be like, it was actually my turn to make a Beetlejuice.
Be like, this is not important to whatever is going on here. Just accept reality, dude.
And the usher says, actually, Alex, this is the most important moment of your life. I liked this story. I liked sort of the redemption of Laura. I mean, she's gone two seasons sort of wallowing in her bad choices, making more bad choices, finding love with Mad Sweeney, which I appreciate that. And that felt like a her way out or sort of a lifeline for her emotionally. But she wasn't resolving her issues. And maybe this season now we get to see a little bit of that. And this goes a long way into her starting to feel just less guilt for causing her father to cheat on her mother and ruining her family. And then it comes down to the fact that the guy was just a dick.
I also really like the immediate freeze on Shadow Moon. So we didn't get a repeat of the entire series. We knew what it was. We knew the emotional beat. We know what it means to Laura when she sees Shadow there. And we don't need to reiterate all of it. The fact that they skipped by that and instead focused on information that we didn't know about Laura, I thought was a very smart choice.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to some other parts. I want to talk about... Mr. Wednesday and Demeter. Pete, do you have any sort of like very derogatory terms you want to call Demeter or anything like that?
Whoa. No, I'm hoping that she is going to realize that Wednesday is bad and get away sooner rather than later and not repeat the same mistakes that Moonshadow made. I have high hopes for her as a character.
Yeah, so you're saying you like Demeter.
Oh, wow.
And that's why, and that's when you're watching the film of your life, that's when they drag you to hell.
Yeah. Also, we should mention this is played by Blythe Danner, great actress. Yes. You know, we've talked a lot about them losing actors here on the show. It's nice to see that they can still draw people in who are names who are very exciting. So it isn't like they're just going downhill here. I think the show is still trucking along at a certain level. I know that sounds like faint praise, but it was good to see her given all the losses that we've had this season.
Yeah, I agree. It's also interesting in the sort of the rotating cast. Like this season, we saw the replacement of Mr. World into Mrs. World. And then we haven't seen her since. Definitely feels like we're just constantly shuffling through what is the sort of the structure of this season.
It also, I mean, on the same note, it does, and I was mildly confused by this with the beginning sequence. I thought we were getting Easter again, who was played by Kristen Chenoweth at the end of the first season. This seems like a clear replacement for her in the plot. It seems to hold sort of the same sort of thing. But I appreciate the fact that they didn't try to make it yet another recasting, but went in a different direction.
Well, and it's interesting. It feels like she fills the same hole, perhaps, in the plot. But Easter was very powerful, Demeter is not.
Right.
It seems like. So it does feel like sort of a turn. And I don't know what Wednesday's – I mean, we could say this in any episode of this series. Like, I don't know what Wednesday's plan is. But he is constantly just getting more and more things under his control to wait to snap his big trap, which we assume we're going to get this season. But we're not quite there
yet. That's a big assumption, I think, at this point.
It has to be.
Right?
They can't – because, like, just on the business side, I got to imagine they don't expect another season. Maybe they'll get one. We don't know that. But I feel like they have to make some big moves here.
Yeah.
Especially given all the turmoil.
If they want to really do it right, they just streamline it and make it all about, Betty. Just get rid of the rest of the cast and really just focus on the heart of it.
Yeah, 42 minutes of car shots.
What you want, maybe because you've been watching so much streaming, you haven't seen car commercials. I think that's something you would really get into. It's a lot of car.
Yeah,
a lot
plot's of very shots. Good.
Yeah. A lot of time the plot is like Matthew McConaughey is like trying to go fishing. and then it turns out that he does go fishing. Spoiler.
Well, there is that car commercial where he runs into a buffalo and we have a Moonshadow kind of, dodging a buffalo.
Wait, I'm sorry.
Is there
I'm sure I'm misinterpreting this. Is there a commercial where Matthew McConaughey runs over a buffalo with a car?
Not runs over. He like stops in front of a buffalo and kind of talks to it.
If they have an idea for a Matthew McConaughey commercial, It's in production currently, or already made.
I was just thinking, what if I ran over that buffalo? That was a terrible Matthew McConaughey. I don't know what I was doing there. I'm sorry.
It was like a Southern lawyer, Matthew McConaughey, which yeah. I believe he's also played.
He was the Lincoln lawyer.
There it is.
Yeah. Back to Demeter for a second. The other thing that I thought was interesting about this is, despite being introduced as Mr. Wednesday's fiance, I'm not totally convinced this new woman is actually his fiance, right? Like, I don't feel like they've acted like that at any point.
No. And I think is that like a reference to being like a Valkyrie? Are they technically potentially
Valkyrie
sword brides, something like that? So that to me, I feel like is a reference, because I don't see any sort of sexual or sort of relationship like that.
She does have she's wearing kind of like the pussy hat, right? Like with the two ears. So that's almost like a horned helmet a little bit.
There you go.
The actress who is playing her is great. She's been in a ton of stuff. I was very excited to see her in this episode.
Yeah, she's good. I like their developing relationship, even though I don't quite understand what's going on there. I do think Valkyrie is probably a good guess in terms of what's happening. But I liked her getting him dressed. I like the fact that she doesn't take a lot of guff from him. It does feel like a different yeah. relationship between her and him versus Shadow Moon and him, and just in terms mm-hmm. of her being the driver. It's also, and I know I mentioned this in previous episodes, but three seasons in, I feel like we've gotten to this weird, more hangout show place plot-wise, where Shadow Moon's like, hey, Wednesday, what's up? I just need to get some quick info. And he's like, oh, here's where Bilquis is. Talk to you later. Which is something that never would have happened in a million years in season one or season two. And I know they need to do that for the plot, but it's a strange thing to see on this show.
Well, and it is a little bit more like procedural, mm-hmm. to your point. Like, yeah, Shadow has to call Wednesday just to keep the tie there. But it's also like, hey, yeah, I got to find this lady. I got to run over to see Bilquis here and this other back to New York. And like, it's very like stuff needs to happen in this show now, when in the earlier seasons, it felt like we were watching a ride. Mm-hmm. And now it's like it's business time.
And also what sucks is we're at this place and there is a car on the ice, okay? And it is about to die and nobody gives a shit about it. And it's driving me fucking crazy.
Well, let's get over to that. Let's talk about Lakeside, because
everybody's favorite part is
it
Lakeside.
It is my favorite part. I really think these sections are working.
Finally deal with it.
Well, it's frustrating to me. The same reason, same thing is Shadow being like, this Lakeside place is weird. Well, time to go to Chicago last episode. This episode, he's like, Lakeside is weird. Oh, a refrigerated cabinet told me to go somewhere, so I'm going to head over there instead. Meanwhile, though, the stuff in Lakeside with the characters is very intriguing. The mystery of what's going on, where Allison went, I think we have a fair idea if you put together the very simple clues. But there's a lot of stuff going on there. From you got the cop character, you got Hinzelman, who's handing out these disposable cameras, which seems very suspicious.
Yeah,
that was
and
that was
then
hysterical.
There's, again, the very pointed clue, and then I'll kick it over to you, Pete. But he gets these old newspapers and falls asleep looking at kid who was missing years and years ago. So we're starting to put the pieces together there very quickly. To get your business point, Justin, it does feel slightly like they have this solid mystery that now they need to string out for 10 episodes. They're just giving little bit by bit and then sending Shadow Moon on these side quests.
So I think, Alex, you might be confused, because the blue mitten didn't belong to the missing girl. It was one of the kids who was looking for the missing girl. That was the clue.
Okay.
I think.
Did he also leave his blood in the snow?
I don't remember that part. But the mitten did belong to not the girl, but the kid. So
I think the
your
blue
clue
mitten,
that's so obvious, I think you missed something.
I think the blue mitten is the girl.
Wow.
Wait. Oh, she's been turned into a blue mitten?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like that Hans Christian Andersen story, The Blue Mitten.
Yeah. I like that you call him Hans Christian Andersen. He's all hands.
He was known for being handsy.
Very handsy. Hey, they
don't
just shortened
put that
it
out
to,
there.
For
you don't know
once
if that's
he became
true.
Popular, they were like, we can't call you Hansy Christian Andersen, so we're going to go with Hans.
Hans. Wait, is it? I always get this wrong. Han Solo? Han Solo?
I say Han Solo.
Han Solo, yeah.
Han Solo.
I feel like Han is what the, like, the podunk people who watch Star Wars on the side of a barn, say.
hey. Don't make fun of people who watch movies on the side of barns.
I mean, those are my people.
And I was going
to
say,
I'd love to watch something on the side of a barn. That sounds fun.
It is. It's a lot like a movie theater, but outside and light moving.
Yeah. I like how George Lucas put all those reds in there.
I do want to speak to something that Zelvin brought up that is kind of frustrating about this series is Shadow Moon is still being manipulated, and it seemed like he had gotten to a better place with it, but now it's still, he's just still kind of wandering around, and I want him to be like, fuck off Wednesday, I'm going to have my own adventure, or decide to be on Wednesday's team because this, the back and the forth and the maybe he'll be there, maybe not. And because the, he had that kind of thing with the Native American god early on that he is an important part. It's kind of driving me crazy a little bit.
Well, I think the point of that, I mean, last season he was like, all right, I'm Wednesday's guy. I'm going to go. Right. I'm going to commit to this. I have powers. I'm going to explore this. And then he sort of got screwed over again. So now he's like, I need to keep my distance. I'm going to go my own way. But Wednesday has predicted all of this. So he's just constantly manipulating Shadow from close up and afar. And at this point in the season, Wednesday has to, he's got Shadow where he wants him in Lakeside. And so he has to manipulate all the rest of the chess pieces to get them where he needs them to be. By what I'm assuming is the end of the season. To your point, Alex, though, it feels like the Lakeside is the season-long mystery, but the series-long mystery is vast. Like, we got all these other, like, smaller gods that need to carry out their storylines, Bilquis, and there's just the ongoing battle between the new gods and the old gods, and they have to split it up. Mm-hmm. I don't think they could. If they saved Lakeside for the second half of the season and just told it all at once, I think that would be too much. And same way on the opposite side, if they just spread Lakeside out more or whatever, like, I think they have to sort of be able to jump back and forth in the way they're doing, because I don't mind it. I like it.
And that's a hot take from a line producer who knows television. Again, not, and knows exactly how things work behind the scenes.
Not a line producer, and you don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, that's true.
I will say two of the things that I think are most intriguing to me in these first couple of episodes are the idea, like we talked about in the last two episodes, about them widening out the world to involve Native American gods, the gods who were there before these old gods actually came over on boats. And then that in this episode, we seem to be teasing a little bit Shadow Moon getting involved in African gods. We've certainly seen that with Mr. Nancy, who is sadly gone this season, and others. But that certainly seems to be part of his heritage based on Ricky Whittle. So I think that's something that you can really delve into further. And I'd be interested to see how all of these elements get together. You know, if they can legitimately widen out the series so it's not just this one-on-one battle of the old god versus the new gods, but all these other gods being like, no, we have our own things going on, these other things are happening, that is exciting and intriguing to me and really widens out the world. I mean, just to mention one more thing, I think it also gets back to was it season one where they introduced Jesus? I think I can't honestly remember.
Yeah.
But just the idea that, like, everybody has their own views of Jesus, I always thought was a really fascinating one. And the more they can get back to, like, religion and what it means for people and how it affects people versus this Game of Thrones style manipulation that's kind of going on, I think the better for the length of the series.
Well, but I also think that this series is tough because it could expand into infinity. Like, religion and belief is such a huge topic. And the fact that they are constantly expanding it out to the next layer of belief, like, it's hard to contain the idea of everyone has a different Jesus that's just hanging around in different regions of the country, while at the same time, this, like, very specific Norse mythology plot is playing out. At the same time, this new gods versus old gods versus now the even older gods. Like, it's just wild. So I think while covering all of those topics, I think the story needs to really start to pare down and get to the crux of it. Mm. And that's what I hope is going to happen in Lakeside.
Now, when we last kind of see Moonshadow, he kind of busts in the room where we know Bilquis was, and we see kind of like the tech god trying to kind of formulate words or piece himself back together. I just wanted to check. My first thought was, Shadow Moon quick kill this guy, because it seemed like maybe he has killed Bilquis. What was your guys' thought? And Zalman, don't cheat, because you've read ahead.
No, I haven't at all. I'm episode by episode, just like you guys. I don't know what's
going on. But you have read the material, all the
material. None of this is from the material. Not yeah, this even is remotely. All. The Lakeside stuff is not word for word, but it's pretty close to what happens there with some variations. But all the stuff with the New Gods and Technical Boy and whatever's going on with Bilquis, Bilquis is entirely different in the show than she is in the book. I have no idea. I mean, my best theory, it seemed to me like Technical Boy was kind of broken, you know, and we've certainly seen him kind of like breaking with Miss World and the New Gods a little bit in different ways. So I do wonder if something went down with Bilquis. Maybe there's something with the tech guy. We've sort of guessed that maybe there's some sort of virus thing going on there. Maybe they're joined together. I don't know.
My first thought was that the Technical Boy was absorbed through the tech guy into Bilquis, and then he killed her or something happened. I would be very surprised if this was the end of Bilquis's story. She just like I don't think that's what happened, but I feel like that's what this episode wanted us to think at the end.
Well, let me throw a theory out at you guys. When I type Bilquis in my notes on the notes app, it autocorrects it to bisques. Do you think that means something? Like maybe she got changed into like a nice thick soup.
That's what it could explain the blood. Mm-hmm. What is blood but a hot bisque?
That's what my doctor
says. That's funny because my autocorrect says
too much butter.
My autocorrect says, "Are you trying to say biscuit?" And then I get hungry and then I forget about what I'm typing.
Ooh, should put a biscuit in some bisque. That's good eating, buddy.
Oh man, that's some good eating right there.
Before we start to wrap up here, any other bits from the episode that you guys want to chat about?
I think we should talk about the opening. We saw this great, I really love how they are back to doing these sort of god introductions. We have
you like a good pig killing? Is that what you're saying?
First off, I mean, like I said, I grew up in the country. Pulling a plow was, you know, how I was on the plow pulling team when I was in middle school and high school. but that is.
Did you really have to plow a field?
No, okay. I didn't. But I did.
Stop lying on our podcast. How dare you?
I should have just said yes. You'd be hard pressed to find some documentation. But I thought corn freaks me out in general, like
really?
At all fronts. Corn husk girls, those little dolls, scary. Corn fields, scary. You can't see what's going on. Corn feels like little teeth. Corn cob. Whoa. Too many corn cob.
We're getting into some JT Sizzle fears here. Do you have nightmares about cornfields and stuff?
No, but I just don't. Corn is a weird looking and feeling vegetable.
Yeah. And plus that kind of doll come to life that had to freak you out as well. And that's how cornfields are made. You have to kill a pig and then spread its entrails in a circle and then everything grows around it.
Pete, you used to be on the plow team, right?
Yeah. I was All-American plow team for 2 seasons. That's a weird thing because people are always talking about crop circles, you know, but no, that's just the pig circle that started the crop. So people are crazy.
That's what I want to know. What came first, the pig or the circle? You know what I'm talking about? Classic pig question. Circles. I'm glad you brought this up, Justin. Pete, were there any other points from the episode that you wanted to talk about?
It just stinks when somebody goes to the trouble of making a pamphlet and someone else refuses to read it. It's just very infuriating. Mm-hmm. Read the pamphlet. All the answers are there. Like, how many times do you got to be told?
This is, I mean, I think we could probably pull back the curtain a little bit and mention that Pete prints out pamphlets for basically everything on our podcast, tries to hand them to us. He keeps emailing us. We don't read them.
No. It's awful.
This is what it's all about.
It's gotten so much harder.
Respect the pamphlet.
Respect the pamphlet, something no one has ever said. two other small things. At the top of the episode, also we get the Viking metal group that we saw 2 episodes ago in the premiere was killed. Mm-hmm. Their name was Sacrifice.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I was under the impression, though, that Odin killed them, right? Not like the implication in this scene was that the new gods took them down somehow. But it certainly seemed like maybe Odin killed them.
Yeah, it definitely, I felt like he killed them. I agree. He was playing. He was sort of performing that he was concerned about it to his quote unquote fiance, his assistant. But I definitely think he did. And the term sacrifice, I think, is going to become very important as the season goes on.
Yeah, I wanted to give a shout out there. I really appreciated, you know, he had the giant books that Shadow Moon was reading. It reminded me of the old when DC did those collection of the comics.
Wednesday Comics.
Wednesday Comics, yeah. You know,
Mr. Shout out to Wednesday Comics.
Yeah. Interesting. It was a nice little crossover event there, you know.
Man, so seeing a newspaper reminded you of something that was printed like a newspaper?
No, no, the old, you know, the books that Shadow Moon was given were oversized. They were big. They won't fit in your standard, you know, board and bag. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to get a bigger thing for that.
So seeing a big book reminded you of another big book.
Yep.
Great. That's a clue. And finally, nothing wrong with dating your landlord, right? You think he's going to get into trouble with that?
I don't think so.
He almost got shot the first time. I don't know what could go wrong after that.
Now, would you feel, if that happened to you, would you feel like, ah, this woman had a gun to my head?
Ooh. Classic me cute.
Yeah.
That was the original draft of When Harry Met Sally, actually. That's how that went.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, I think the original draft, it was she had a sieve underneath Harry's neck and was like, oh, you're not the pig I'm going to slaughter.
A shiv?
Or a sieve? You know, the little circle knife that they had in the show? Cut the pig's throat open.
Scythe?
A sieve is what you put like pasta in.
Yeah, I mean, that was the most confusing thing.
Or a colander.
Oh, man, I am.
Yeah, scythe is the thing that death holds, that sort of blade that you use for cutting down wheat. Is that what you're thinking of?
It was a little circular knife that was used to kill the pig. To be fair,
I know we're like harping on this here, but in When Harry Met Sally, it was a sieve, and she wanted him to smell some pasta. They had this whole scene about like, come on, smell the pasta. And he's like, I don't want to smell the pasta. And she's like, smell the pasta. So it wasn't very funny.
Amazing, amazing impression.
Thank you. I'm 3 for 3 this episode, I gotta say. Before we wrap up here, who is worthy of your worship this week? Justin, let's go to you.
Oh, did not see it coming. Caught me off guard. I'm gonna give it up for Hinzelman.
Mm-hmm.
Julia Sweeney coming out strong, hating on the internet. She wants to do it her way. I do think she is one of the characters that is doing a great job of being interesting and being paid attention to without taking up too much of the actual story. So she's really using the time on screen very effectively.
Pete, what about you?
Well, this was a very tough episode for me. I didn't get any things that I really liked, and then the return of somebody I didn't like. So I'm going to give it up for the SNL lady. The whole "sorry I'm late" and clearly she runs the show was really funny.
That's Hinzelman. That's
it's the one you picked. Damn it! Damn it!
Great. So that's two Hinzelmans. I'm going to go with Laura Moon for this episode. I thought Emily Browning did a great job. I know Pete.
Laura Boone
is like slut shaming her or whatever he is doing. But
Stop saying that.
I think she's great. I think the emotional highs and lows that she went through, even if I was iffy about some of the choices in the storyline, I think she did a fantastic job with it throughout. And watching her slowly break down and accept reality, as they say in the show, I thought was really nice to see. I'm excited to see what happens with her journey going forward. And I hope you follow us on our journey going forward. If you'd like to support it, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about American Gods. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen to the show on Twitter, @AGodcast. @AGodcast, not just, you know, check out a Godcast or whatever you want to do.
Hey, check out a Godcast.
Hey, whatever is cool for you, buddy. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, keep on worshiping.